we've learned anything from these past couple of years, my fellow Americans, it's that personal medical freedom and liberty are in crisis. America Out Loud Pulse brings together the top experts in healthcare-related fields to keep you a beat ahead.
This is Dr. Jordan Vaughn here with Dr. Stuart Tankersley. We are glad to have you on this Tuesday, or if you're listening to the podcast, wherever you are and whatever time you are. We are a group that is represented by something called Concerned Doctors, and we are, I guess, in our fifth show or sixth show. Stuart, where are we here? We're learning our way around this.
Feeling our way through it.
Yes. The media training we got in med school is a little lackluster. I actually probably need to talk to our med school about how podcast classes, their curriculum wasn't that robust. So anyway, so in all honesty, we are here again on our Tuesday, and we are here to talk about many things, including medical freedom, most appropriately in the context of the current ongoing COVID-19 crisis and its response that our governments and the people that you really entrusted with good counsel and health over the last, 30, 40 years and thought would be always honest with you and open to what was best for the patient, it's been a little bit of a difficult time the last few years. And a lot of people out there are wanting to know how we get it back to really where medicine was, which is the relationship between the patient and the physician, and really not only encouraging good health and wellness, but also treating disease, but treating the disease specific to the person that has it. And so I'm going to let Stuart take over and kind of introduce himself again.
Yeah, thank you, Jordan. Great to be back again. And once again, talking about this very important topic of the disaster of the last 2 years that has been imposed on us greatly from the powers that be. And I think we should start with the beginning of that testimony from a week or two ago that we have pulled up, where Ranking Member Scalise in the U.S. Congress is about to interview some people in a hearing on coronavirus. And he revealed something I think that is very indicative of the abuses of those in complete control and power of us during this time. If you wouldn't mind playing that now, and we could talk more about it after.
I do want to highlight what, in my view at least, is the most harmful and alarming interference that we've seen with the science from this Biden administration. It has been uncovered that the Biden administration officials injected political interference into the CDC's school reopening guidance in 2021. Documents and testimony prove that, contrary to the CDC's longstanding practice of keeping draft guidance documents confidential, senior agency officials, including the CDC director herself, shared secretly those draft documents of school guidance with the American Federation of Teachers, a political union with no scientific expertise, but with a history of donating tens of millions of dollars to Democrat campaigns. After reviewing the draft, the union staff asked Director Walensky to install a trigger, as they put it, in the guidance to make it easier for union bosses to shut down schools. The CDC obliged. They went along with the union boss's request by changing the science. And what happened? Thousands of schools across the country remained closed throughout the 2020 and 2021 school year.
So, Jordan, this audio of Representative Scalise in the coronavirus subcommittee is very telling about what has happened. And in a way, what I've been very concerned about from the beginning is with these draconian measures that we have never experienced before in our country of freedom, we have what appears to be the sacrificing of the young and healthy for the old and frail. That, to me, is a startling reality that this clip clearly validates. Because as he says, there was no reason to have, there has never been a situation where the CDC has reached out to any other entity. It's always been internal. And here they are politicizing it so that the union bosses of our teachers' unions gets to determine who's going to go to work and where and when, to the detriment of the young and healthy. It is very telling and very disappointing, to say the least. So the question is, why do we continue to tolerate it?
Yeah, I think even that, I mean, the first question is, does the CDC have the authority to do many of these things in the first place? I think most recently with the mask mandate being struck down by the judge, they really actually, you know, as much as Anthony Fauci would say, well, why are judges getting involved in science? No. The judge didn't get involved in science. The judge basically said, do you even have the power to do this? And I think at that point, the fact that the CDC assumed they had this power makes it even more suspect that they would reach out for opinion from a political body. Not even, I mean, again, the teachers union is just a power body. It's you know, it has tries to have political influence, but it in no way has any statutory authority or anything. So something that really just goes to show you that this wasn't about what was best for your health, your kids' health. It was what was best for the politics and the power brokers, which is, you know, kind of has shown us the bigger problem of a lot of our federal authority is most of the decisions they make, they aren't in your best interest. A lot of us knew that, but didn't ever think that it would get to the level that even our children were subjected to these basic crazy left-wing political bodies and their education, their mental health would be subject and at the whims of these power brokers in Washington. I think that's the real problem. But as you said, I mean, it's absolutely nuts to think that they were going outside of what their usual process was. But then again, I feel like the CDC was already way outside its purview.
Right. And not only the CDC, but all these government agencies. It was less than 2 months ago that I was in a federal hearing as an expert witness. And the whole principle was the DOD, Department of Defense, had made a decision that either if you will get a vaccine or you will get out of the military. And there had been a law passed in 1994, I believe, validating, Democrat and Republican passed law, validating the First Amendment right of the right of conscience, the right of religion, that says, if I have a problem with something with an agent like this, then I don't have to, like these vaccines, then I don't have to get it. And the DOD said, no, we're going to ignore that. And even told the judge that he had no purview over them, despite their blatant disregard of the law. And the law, and thankfully, within 18 hours after the hearing, the judge came, ruled in our favor so that they couldn't fire this Navy SEAL, who is now a commander of a warship. And within 2 weeks, the 11th Circuit validated that ruling, and now it's on its way to the U.S. Supreme Court. But all of this is just an abuse, time after time after time, of people who want more and more power, and you and I to have less and less authority over our own lives and less freedom, because as we said before, freedom is the ability to put responsible constraints on yourself. And they clearly do not understand that definition. And you got to wonder, how do we as a country, as a culture, continue to allow this? And I think this this book, this theory that was published by Dr. Massette out of Europe on mass formation hypnosis or mass formation psychosis is revelatory as to how we got into this. Now, what is it going to take to get out of it? It's going to be people to seek the truth and open up their eyes and get out of the trap of fear and isolation that they have so abused us with. So I think those are very important ideas that people need to consider, and hopefully it'll allow us to escape these abuses and we can return to a more free world.
And in some ways, I mean, the more I start looking at some of these test cases that people were doing prior to this outbreak within the, you know, Johns Hopkins kind of Bill Gates, Melinda Gates Foundation world, where they were testing the vaccine hesitancy and the, you know, the interfaces between business and government and all of this, it seems that they, everything that they ran through in the last 2 years was almost like it was already wargamed, which is pretty concerning. The interesting thing about that war game is, as you look at what has been the result of that, I mean, obviously utter destruction for the last 2 years, but the people's response has not been what they predicted. And I think that's where we have to continue to have people stand up and fight for what is true freedom and liberty, not security or health, but instead just freedom in general. And I think that is something that one of the good examples is now when you look at vaccine hesitancy, you know, their goal was to get, you know, the vaccine hesitant to be wanting to be vaccinated out of fear. And that happened, you know, that they, you know, at that time, I think over 90% of the people were acceptant of the vaccine programs for children and adults. And since their war game, which, you know, they basically said in their war game, if we had an opportunity like this, we could have a vaccine pushed out upon everybody. And with fear, everyone would be more acceptant of a vaccine mandate at the state, national, and really world level. And again, their goal to exterminate disease. But I mean, it sounds like a good goal, but you know, at the expense of our liberties, it's a questionable goal. But what has happened now is actually the exact opposite of what they thought might happen if there was this kind of pandemic, where people would all of a sudden say, oh, well, there's only a vaccine to help and everyone just needs to get on board. In fact, now people are not only not accepting of the vaccine that they offered, but are questioning, probably rightfully so, the current vaccine schedules for children and adults. And even the state legislatures are starting to upend what they had already thought were victories, where they had these schedules to children, you know, not including the COVID vaccine, but the previous schedules. And you know, they're seeing, oh my goodness, we actually not only are not moving forward, but we're losing our foothold on our vaccine programs for you know, that are mandated for schools and children and these kind of things. The hesitancy among parents and what they've seen in the malfeasance of our leaders in public health has made them rightfully so question everything that's really been told them since really the beginning. So I think that's a secondary effect that I don't think they planned, but I think it's something that we need to continue to push, where we need to return personal health decisions to the person.
Right. Once again, that is our major theme. And when you look at what they've done, what is most alarming to me is, and I think we've mentioned this before, but I think what's alarming is nobody has confidence that they're going to punish those that have done this to us. And it goes back to the message that we've talked about before in another podcast, and that the solution of repentance, seeking forgiveness, something our culture needs to do. And if we do that, I think that then the culture will demand that those who have done this to us be held responsible. And unfortunately, I don't think that we're at a point where people will go through the discomfort of currently, I don't think we're at that level of people going through the discomfort personally of repenting, forgiving, seeking forgiveness, and then addressing this tragedy in an honest way that has yet to be done. So I think the mass formation psychosis explains a lot of it. I think the blatant lies, misrepresentations, and abuses are undeniable now. That's why so many more are coming to our group and other groups and are waking up to some physicians are coming to our side of this, because they're slowly seeing, wait a minute, this doesn't make sense after 2 years that we're doing this to ourselves. Our children are still being threatened with lockdowns when we've known, for example, for 2 years or longer, that they don't work. Masks harm the children. And this testimony that Representative Scalise gives in this coronavirus committee meeting reveals more and more and more, and we will continue to see more and more and more of these abuses. And I'm hopeful that our country can turn this around and change. And it's not going to be at the ballot box. It's going to be in individual hearts and communities throughout the country that are going to change this dynamic and where we're headed, because scientifically, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah. And I think, again, the truth or honesty is an effective tool for our public health officials to return to, because I think the biggest problem is not that they had, you know, that they were making proclamations, but what they were proclaiming as fact and settled was not only not that, but had a good bit of alternative, alternative ways to do things. I mean, one of the good examples would be when they say, well, this is the most tested vaccine in history. Well, that's a very interesting way to say something. That doesn't necessarily mean that it was tested in the proper way, or it was tested like every other vaccine. So again, but to say that it was not tested on pregnant women, wasn't tested and done in the typical animal trials that should have been done, is not the same as saying it's the most tested. And so, again, I think the other thing that people are seeing in open daylight is that our authorities are censoring truth that is inconvenient. And the reality of medicine is, it is not a perfect science. And so being truthful to your patient about the pluses and the minuses and being open about that is the only way to operate in a world where there is risk. And as I think Malone said, when there's risk, there has to be choice. And in medicine, that means there should always be choice, because there's always risk. There's nothing, there's not one medicine that I give out or one even to recommendation that I give out that in some situation is not going to be the wrong answer. And right. That's what we have to always be really humble about, our knowledge base and our understanding, and also be truthful to the patient.
Yeah. So a couple of points before you introduce our guest for the week. Number one, as we've indicated several times before, the people that are on the other side of this are not our enemy. And Jordan, I received good news yesterday in that our state health officer, Dr. Harris, is back at work. He, as you know, was sickened by COVID, and now he's back to work. The other one is that we always update is the Johns Hopkins mortality rate. The Johns Hopkins website this week keeps us at 18th highest mortality from COVID in the world. We haven't fallen behind Latvia this week. So we are now 18th worst. We're in the worst situation in the United States with a tenth of those that have died in the world being in our country that is the most advanced in the history of the world. And clearly, once again, this shows our failures. What is it going to take for us to change and do the right thing and save lives and get our country back on the right path?
Yep, agreed. Well, after the break, we have another doctor in our group. Again, our group is Concerned Doctors at concernedoctors.org. Go to that website if you want to help us out, if you want to learn stuff, if you want to see if there's other doctors within your community, and also just if you want to continue to help doctors that are always going to be focused on your rights and your authority as an individual to make the best decisions for your health. So that's concerneddoctors.org. But our guest today is Dr. Amy Hartsfield, and she is an oral facial pain specialist and has some interesting insight into the vaccine, as well as after I interview Amy, we will have a patient that had a very interesting story and experience with the vaccine. And it really will teach us a lot about how, to approach these differences and changes that have happened in the last 2 years, and how to find a good doctor that is critically thinking and open to all the possibilities of a health issue. So again, we'll be back after the break.
If you're like me, you'd like life to return to some kind of normal. You're burned out on the precautions, but deep down, you still want to avoid getting sick. You've heard it talked about time and again by respected medical professionals. Use a povidone iodine antiviral nasal spray. Made in the USA, Cofix RX reduces viral loads and minimizes the risk of you getting sick. Find a retailer near you or click our banner ad on AmericaOutloud.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
Surely, if you can't find it here, you can't find it anywhere. We are the pulse and voice of everyday American thought. So you can listen in on our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
In today's world, there's no escaping the headlines filled with warnings about emerging viruses and dangerous superbugs. Genesis is the only technology that safely and effectively obliterates harmful pathogens both in the air and on surfaces. Genesis plus HOCL neutralize these threats to your environment in just seconds. Find out more about this amazing technology at genesisfolger.com/outloud for a 15% discount. With Genesis, you'll be prepared for what's next.
All right, we are back. This is Dr. Jordan Vaughn and on America Out Loud Pulse. Again, we are a group of doctors. Our organization is concernedoctors.org. We are here really as a group of doctors that are trying to make sure that we return medicine to its original origin, which is an oath to take care of the patient. And I think one of the things that we do within this group is starting to see a lot of different specialties that are seeing the consequences of COVID and the consequences even of the vaccine. And it's really given us the ability to kind of learn from each of these disciplines. I'm excited to actually interview Amy Hartsfield, who is a dentist, but is specialized in the area of oral facial pain. It's a specialty even I at the time didn't know much about, mainly because I probably don't go to the dentist often enough. But either way, dentistry is another field of medicine, both in schooling and in its specialties. And a lot of times there's not much overlap in terms of what we do every day and what the dentist does every day. But there is one thing that has unified us, and that is that all of our patients seem to be vaccinated recently, unfortunately, and are seeing some just interesting things in our clinic. And it was amazing to hear that the dentists were also seeing things that were different over the past 18 months. And I think that's why I love having Amy here to talk about that. So first off, Amy, I'd like you to introduce yourself, but also tell us exactly what an oral facial pain specialist does.
Okay. Thanks so much for having me, Jordan. I really appreciate it. Orofacial pain is a new specialty to dentistry. It was recognized a couple years ago in the midst of the pandemic. It's not new. It's been around for decades. It was just recognized by the American Dental Association. What I explain to my patients an orofacial pain specialist is that we treat pain from the neck up. Whatever pain that may be. So it's, migraines, it's neuropathies, basically mainly neuropathies of the trigeminal nerve. We treat TMJ disorder, and then toothaches that aren't toothaches. We called them in our world before of dentistry phantom tooth pains. Mm-hmm. After they have teeth extracted, they still have the pain there. So anything that is painful, above the neck, that keeps these patients from going from their dentist. The dentist tells them it's not to do with their teeth, to this dental specialist that says it's not to do with their teeth, then over to the neurology world and ENT world. Like my world is to try to be that go-between to say, no, this is what it is. And that's what orofacial pain specialist is.
So basically they've been a lot of times worked up by a bunch of different fields. By the time they get to you, it's like, well, it's none of them,
right. But
go to this person that is super special, and she'll figure it out for you.
Yeah,
which doesn't sound like it sounds harder than it. That sounds pretty hard to me. But anyway, because easy stuff is already grabbed off the trees.
Well, hopefully, sometimes it'll bring it to where they don't have to go to so many different specialists and feel like they've kind of been beaten up, by seeing so many different specialists. So
tell me a little bit about how you got interested in a lot of the things that you were seeing in the clinic and how they may be related to whether it was long COVID, post COVID, or even vaccine injuries?
Because I was seeing an increase of my pain patients in general, like migraines, more neuropathies, like the toothaches that weren't toothaches. I was seeing osteonecrosis where implants were just placed or extractions happening that used to just be from people that were taking osteoporosis prevention medication. I saw a very big uptick of tinnitus, where it was being referred to me. A lot of times ENTs will refer that to me and say it has to do with TMJ disorder.
Okay.
And so they'll send that over. But then as I started studying, I realized, I was seeing a lot of people that their jaw would just lock off. And if you look at all the information about the COVID vaccines and the spike protein, in spike protein in general, COVID, it creates like a cytokine storm. And this can happen and have actually into the joints and cause a problem into the joints as well. So that's how I kind of started seeing an uptick of those patients and then asking those patients if they had COVID or been COVID vaccinated.
And then the other thing I think it probably helped you out is knowing and learning about your own personal story with the contents of vaccines or their ingredients and how it made you probably even more, not necessarily, but wanted to read everything about a vaccine before you considered it.
Yeah, absolutely. So going back to January 2021, I was actually signed up to go get the vaccine, but I had been injured before. So there's everybody thinks of a hypersensitivity or an allergic reaction as just anaphylaxis. But there are like five different types of hypersensitivities, and it can be the more you're prolongedly introduced to something, the more that you will have a different type of hypersensitivity other than anaphylaxis. So that had happened to me. So when I was signed up to go, my husband was as well, but he had chronic kidney disease, and we felt like he needed to. We didn't know anything about the vaccines. Nothing was really kind of told. And so I started doing my research. I knew that I had a reaction. One of the things I had a reaction to was polysorbate 80.
Okay.
And so I did my research, and I learned that when I looked at the ingredients, polysorbate 80 was not in the Pfizer or the Moderna. But then I learned there was polyethylene glycol.
Okay.
And so I started doing my own research at that time, and I found out that they were so chemically similar in structure that I did not feel comfortable taking that. There was some data, but not a lot of data on that. So I had to really research hard. So I told my husband I wouldn't get it, but I would get the Johnson & Johnson if it came out with neither polysorbate 80 or polyethylene glycol, and it came out with polysorbate 80. So, and my husband's, story was, we thought since he had chronic kidney disease that he needed to have the vaccine. And so he got the first one, we got COVID. And after the first one, I really got really kind of concerned was when I tested positive. He never went tested, but he was sick, and we knew what it was. And then his doctor had told him he still needed to get the booster. And I'm like, that doesn't make any sense. You know, so that's when I started like really, and then I was frustrated. Well, he still followed his doctor's orders against my questioning and knowing. And then, so then of course, after that, I mean, his kidney numbers, you know, have never kind of, well, they are recovering of some things that we're doing, but it's been a long haul because it's actually has affected his kidneys. And I've had other family members that have gotten the vaccines as well that have had issues, and even a friend who had like neuropathy of the arm. So all that kind of happened in the very beginning, and it was starting to open my eyes to like into my own practice to be able to recognize these things.
So tell me kind of in your clinical space, when you started to see some patients that you thought, this is different and it's related, contemporaneously with an injection or a booster or those kind of things. And what made you think that?
Well, actually, I remember one of the first ones was an elderly man who had a type of neuritis on his left jaw. And I remember hearing that some people were getting swelling of lymph nodes on the same side that they had the injection on. And so he came to me and he said, you know, I'm having this pain and then nobody can figure out what this knot is on the side of my face. And I knew it was. I mean, it was a submandibular lymph node and it was just right under his jaw. And I just asked him, I said, which side did you get your vaccine on? And it was the same side, left side. And then this is when I knew that I needed to like really start paying attention to certain things on my patients.
Yeah, I think even they started to see in regards to lymph nodes, a lot of the radiologists that were doing mammography started to actually recommend women that got their vaccine to postpone their mammogram for a while because it would give them false positives in regards to lymph node swelling in the breast. So you started to just see weird stuff that, you know, there's no other really explanation other than that that's contemporaneously associated with the injection. So at that point, how did you go about learning about it? Because obviously, I will tell you, in medicine, it's not easy to, you know, find good info on this. But I can imagine in dentistry, it's even more difficult.
Right. Yeah, actually, so what happened was I was just raising questions constantly. It was like by April of last year. I remember going out to dinner with my colleague and neurologist who I refer a lot to and our husbands. And then somehow it came up. And I think I had heard already, she and I had a conversation before at a meeting from a headache, a meeting that she was not vaccinated. And so then that night she was telling me about, like, she started just talking all this lingo that I had no clue what it was, like the FLCCC, ivermectin, all this information. It was just so overwhelming. And so I just remember looking at her and going, because I would refer patients to her and vice versa, she would refer them to me. But I remember saying, I don't know what this is. Ivermectin, like if I have to do this and I have to prescribe this, I'm going to send them to you. And I remember her looking over at me because this is our relationship. And she was like, FLCCC and then IVERM. Because she couldn't handle all the patients of mine.
Yeah.
She was like, absolutely not, Amy, you know, in her nice way of putting it. And so from there, it just started. And I started following some of the stuff that she was telling me. And then we learned about concerned doctors. And, you know, we had seen the affidavit from Dr. Teresa Long. And then we learned about concerned doctors. And then we'd seen something that concerned doctors had sent to Montgomery. And then so, you know, she's that type of personality that she just, I think, called up somebody in concerned doctors. And we joined. And from that point forward, we started, you know, following like people like Robert Malone and Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and Ryan Cole and, you know, Teresa Long. So with that, I tell people all the time, oral facial pain, I had to do 400 hours to get into my specialty. And I think I've done 400 hours in this last year in COVID and COVID vaccine injury.
I think one of the nice things about, even though the censorship aspects of the internet is awful, but the one thing that I think it's nice for physicians and physicians who are willing to have an open mind to be able to get access to people that are thinking against really the what I would say ongoing narrative and find that information. That's one of the nice things about the current environment that we have, that we can get that. Now, it does require us to look at it. We can't just assume that our state agency or the CDC or the FDA is going to tell us what we need to be told. But I think that's one of the things. So again, that goes back to the importance of kind of even physicians talking, but then not just talking, being able to say, hey, go look here. And I think you'll have, go look for yourself, I think is one thing. And that really helps us get more information and then go, hey, this starts to make sense. Because again, I think most physicians are smart people that have critical thinking skills. They just need to, start with a question.
So. Well, I think that brings up a good memory I had. I remember one of my best friends from dental school, I happened to reach out to her and she's like, hey, I've been avoiding this vaccine, but I want to go to Costa Rica. And I think it was like January or February. She's like, I'm just going to have to get it. And I'm like, I don't think so. And I started giving her she said she knew something was up. She didn't know how to put her finger on it. She couldn't find it anywhere. So I started giving her a few articles of, about it. And then she said her world was completely opened up because she knew where to go to find things and she couldn't find these things all along. So, here is a critical thinker. I mean, to me, she's one of the most critically thinking people I know. And she didn't know where to find it.
Yeah.
So that's where everything with the censorship has just been ridiculous.
And I think, I will say a lot of the doctors they either personally have experiences with it and they get a vaccine injury. I think one of the probably important aspects of your story is that you already knew enough to look into vaccines that they're not always the perfect thing that the TV commercial tells you. Sometimes you need to know what you're allergic to and whether it's in there, right?
Right.
But also to be able to, look for alternative ways when things really don't add up. And I think, again, it goes back to, I don't know how many doctors I talk to that say, you know what, I've already had COVID. And I think it's the starting point for a lot of physicians. I've already had COVID. Why are they wanting to vaccinate me? It just doesn't pass the smell test. And like it was for you, that go get the booster kind of thing, even for your husband. It's like, what are you talking about? And I think, don't ignore that signal that says this doesn't smell right. I think a lot of physicians, as well as encouraging your physicians to say, hey, this doesn't smell right. Let's investigate.
Yeah. And on a personal, being, physicians or dentists or whatever, is literally, my husband was recommended to have the second vaccination and he did. But then months passed and, I got to learn all this stuff. So I do know that God has a hand in it. I got to learn all of this stuff so that when he went back to his nephrologist, said, recommended he get the booster by the fall. He came home as a joke. He was acting like he was serious. And he said, they recommend I get the booster just to see my reaction. And of course, I blew a gasket. And he was like, I'm not going to get it. I'm just kidding. But, for me, I just think that I think there was a purpose. God had a purpose, and he's pointed us in that direction, and he's just helped protect some of the people around us, that we can as much as we can.
Well, Amy, thank you so much for being here today, and we're actually going to interview in the next segment. We're going to interview one of Amy's patients, actually two of her patients, one with both of them are related to the vaccine, but both of them are pain and issues above the neck, thank goodness. Because that's not my area. But I think that will be a good way to hear about what she was hearing in the clinic. Anything else you want to say before we get those interviews started?
I don't think so. I just really appreciate this opportunity for this word to get out there, for even America Out Loud giving us this platform just to get the word to people that have been wanting to hear the truth for a while.
All right. Well, thanks, Amy. And we will be back in after this break, and we will have Amy and me talking to two of her patients, and it should be a great time.
We wouldn't go a day without washing our hands, brushing our teeth, and washing our nose. Well, wait, we wash our nose? Yes. The number one place where bacteria, viruses, and pollen enter the body is through the nose. So the average person breathes over 23,000 times a day. That's 23,000 opportunities for bacteria, viruses, and irritants to get into your nose and make you sick. For an extra layer of protection, wash your nose with Clear. That is Clear, X-L-E-A-R. Clear's drug-free nasal spray features xylitol, an ingredient proven to block adhesion of many nasty bacteria and viruses, and effectively clean, not just rinse like a saline, but wash your nose. Clear nasal spray quickly alleviates congestion, opens your airway, and ensures your body's natural defenses are strong. Read the research studies for yourself at clear.com. That's X-L-E-A-R.com. Protect yourself from the pathogens and junk you breathe. Pick up a bottle for you and your family today.
So I am back with Dr. Amy Hartsfield here. This is Jordan Vaughn with America Out Loud Pulse. And we are joined by one of Amy's patients, Ms. Alverson. And really, I think I'm going to let Amy take it over from here.
Ms. Alverson, I want to thank you so much for actually coming on and being willing to tell your story of where you felt like you were vaccine injured. We want to welcome you to the show and just tell you just again how thankful we are for it. So let's talk a little bit about like what type of pain you had. Like when you presented to my office, what was the pain that you had felt?
I had severe right jaw pain in an area where a tooth had been extracted about 2 months prior. The pain at times was incapacitating. I would have to sit and hold heat or a cold pack on the side of my face. I slept with an ice pack. I had shooting pains on the side of my face and across my forehead, and it began to affect my vision. Got so bad I couldn't lay my head on a pillow at night, you know, just sleep on my back and lay my head on a pillow. It felt like I had inflammation in my face and head. If you've ever had an abscess, the pain was that severe at times. I was unable to open my mouth wide enough to eat normally. Chewing solid food would cause horrific pain in the right side of my jaw. So I just didn't eat solid food. It wouldn't go away immediately either. It might linger 20 minutes or so. And usually when it happened, I would grab an Advil, and that would, when that kicked in, that would help a lot.
Let's go back to like talking about the treatment. So I remember you coming to my office, and you had an extraction about 2 months prior. And that the dentist, you'd gone back and seen, there was a couple of dentists that were together, and you had gone back and seen one of them, and they couldn't see what was going on. And they had given you, what did they give you for medication, or what did they try to do for help for treatment?
Well, during the extraction, which took 45 minutes, that was one reason I'm sure the TMJ kicked in, but it was a difficult extraction. I've never had anything like that. I wasn't in pain during the time. They were very careful to give me plenty of shots. I did ask for nitrous oxide because I felt like it's going to be a long, drawn-out procedure. And she gave me, I think it's called Norco. And she had given me that to take home after the extraction. So I had that. We always keep Advil around here. So I had that also. I found out that Advil did much better to help me with the pain. And I had gone back a couple of times after the extraction and saw my dentist, and he had thoroughly examined me twice. I'd gone back twice, and even at one time took some x-rays. I was trying to describe the pain to him, and I was telling him it was like I had an abscess. By that, I realized by the second visit, he was thinking I was saying I had an abscess. I corrected him, said, I know I don't have an abscess, but the pain is like an abscess. So at that point, what he was advising is use Morteat and take ibuprofen. That was pretty much it.
And then he referred you to me.
Yeah.
Right.
And when he realized that I was still in a lot of pain, and it just wasn't getting better, he asked me, he said, "Would you mind if I send you to a TMJ specialist?" And I said, "Oh, please do." I said, I cannot continue like this. And so my appointment with you was scheduled for October the 27th. That was 7 weeks after the extraction. And after a two-hour examination by you, and yes, it was 2 hours because I kind of timed it. I didn't believe it, but I kind of timed it. You said something very important that stuck out to me. You said, "I think there is something else going on here besides the extraction." And, you know, that was the end of the examination. But that stuck with me, and I thought, what in the world could it be? What else could it be? I had no idea.
So, Dr. Hartsfield, tell us a little bit of what you were thinking in her case and why you thought it might have been something different.
Usually, because actually in her examination, when I looked in there, I mean, I looked at the extraction site, and it was red like it should be for healing process. But I actually palpated the area, and I did see a little pus coming out of that area. And that is real indicative of osteonecrosis. And the most typical things, people that we see that have osteonecrosis are ones that have been on osteoporosis prevention medications. And, you know, Ms. Alverson had never been on osteoporosis preventative medications. And so that raised a red flag because I had been following the science behind the vaccines, and I knew that they caused clotting and even microclotting, and even microclotting matters in bone and healing process. So then I questioned, especially for her age, about the clotting. And so that's when I immediately said we could have something else, and I went and tested her.
So tell me about osteonecrosis and why, in your case, you know, that's something that her local dentist or local physician wouldn't have kind of picked up on initially.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. No, they wouldn't have picked up on it initially at all, because when, you know, back when I was doing general dentistry, or, you know, even the oral surgeons, they really think of those patients as the ones that are going to be on that medication. So it wouldn't have been on the dentist, either one of her dentists that had looked at her radar at all. And then second, I only kind of considered it because of literally what I had been learning about the vaccine and the clotting issues. And, you know, and like I said, I was just able to get a little bit of pus out, and she could have seen her dentist like a few days before, and that pus formation wasn't there. It could have like come out with the saliva. So there was no way that this could have ever been on their radar at all, in their defense, big time.
So kind of tell me exactly, I guess when you say it was, obviously now we know it's different. Then tell me what other things, as you probably got some labs and did some other things with her, what kind of made you say, this is probably, in all honesty, probably not in your world to begin with, but all of a sudden said, this is different enough, you need to do something.
So at that time is when we were all, Jordan, you, like all of us were talking, some of us were talking and trying to figure out labs and everything to draw. And so I drew these labs on her, and I didn't say anything to her. You know, I did not tell her, because again, we talked about, you know, this is fall 2021, and a lot of that information was being kept from everyone. You know, there wasn't vaccine injuries. There wasn't. So people would never believe it. So I was careful who I said that to. You know, in hindsight's kind of 2020, because I'll never forget getting an email from her saying on a Friday, saying, "I finished," because we put her on prednisone, and I put her on an antibiotic for what we use for osteonecrosis. And I did the blood work. And so she emailed me and said, "I was feeling really good on the prednisone, but now I'm really not feeling good at all. And I really need some help." And so I looked at her labs. They come in like the day before, and her clotting factors were really very, very elevated. And so I immediately called her and I said, "You know, hey, Ms. Alverson, I've got your blood work in. We'll talk about it. Be in my office on Monday. But by the way, don't take a booster." And that's when she told me I took a booster within days of leaving your office for your after the consultation. And that's, my heart sunk.
So it had gotten, your symptoms had gotten better, Ms. Alverson, but once you took the booster, it seems like those symptoms kind of reappeared. Am I reading that right?
No, it was when I came off prednisone.
So that prednisone was kind of, I feel like, you know,
masking,
was protecting her when she got the booster, you know, so she was protecting her. Had she had not had that prednisone on board, then she would have definitely had a massive problem with the booster. So, and at that point in time, I remember, you know, I remember her daughter, they told me when she came that Monday that her daughter was with her. And her daughter came very concerned because her mom was like not able to see to drive. She was getting very disoriented and she was very, very upset about it. So then Ms. Alverson, tell us about what you remember from coming in and hearing about your blood work and what do you remember from that appointment?
As you said, as my daughter said, my thinking process, I had to get her to drive me to Homewood, which I normally can drive without a problem. But my thinking processes was not good. My vision was blurry. So I asked Jill to just take me over there.
Yeah, that's what you remember. It wasn't exactly like that, but it was that I literally did say, and that was really, you know, I told you what it was from, what we were going to do. And then I do remember telling you guys that we did need to pray. Right. And your daughter wanted other answers than we need to pray.
Right.
And I said, don't worry, I have other answers. We're going to put her on ivermectin and send her to Dr. Vaughn.
Right.
And that's when you got referred to Dr. Jordan Vaughn. And, you know, immediately when you went over there, he took the labs again. And after taking the prednisone, I put you on some vitamins and the ivermectin. Within a couple of days, your numbers were getting a lot better. And I think, Dr. Vaughn, you put her on Eliquis.
Yeah, we put her on an anticoagulant as well. So, yeah, I mean, again, I think there's a combination of an immune response as well as that fibrin or what we would call the microclot, that the reality that the spike protein is making fibrin be laid down and then actually inhibit it from being broken down. And that really causes these small kind of layered clots that aren't your typical clot that, you know, you would get a complete blockage of a vessel. And that would be, instead you get kind of local tissue hypoxia. And I think for the nerve, it's probably in a similar way. It's basically starving the nerve from really doing what it's supposed to do. And I think it responds in pain. I think even the osteonecrosis is because it's not healing right. It's not getting the blood supply that it needs. So,
yeah. And I mean, I've seen this now. I mean, of course we have data now from the Department of Defense and we see like osteonecrosis that's happening and just even healthy young 30 year olds, you know, soldiers. And so there I've seen like, you know, failure of implants that have been in already, you know, and or they were just placed and a lot more failure rate in our world from osteonecrosis of a procedure that was done recently. So more than we've ever seen in the past. So it's been on my radar. And that's when she came in and I just thought that that's part of the problem. And we got you taken care of. And Ms. Cheryl, how are you feeling today?
I feel great. No pain. The extraction site has healed up nicely. So it's wonderful. Thank you.
That's great.
Thank you so much, both of you.
You're welcome. You are so welcome.
So, tell me a little bit about in your kind of head, Ms. Alverson. Was it interesting to you for this treatment? How much? And we're talking about the vaccine and the boosters that it was kind of thrown across the airwaves by everybody and anyone. And it was almost said that there isn't any possibility that there could be any reason that you might have some delayed healing or facial pain. I mean, were those things that you had ever even heard about or anybody had even told you that might be a consequence of them at the time?
No, not at all.
Typically in medicine, at least, probably when Dr. Hartsfield operated on you, she at least tells you what the consequences might be if there's any kind of problem, right? I mean,
right.
In medicine, I think our credibility a lot of time is based on our ability to tell our patients not only the good, but the bad, right?
Right, right.
And so tell me a little bit about what that makes you think that in this kind of world, we're almost being advertised all the time about something, but not really being informed about what might happen. Again, you might still decide to do it, but you know, kind of in the past, I imagine you've been told by your doctor the good and the bad.
Right. It's just been such a puzzling, unknown thing that you really don't know who to believe, what kind of news to believe. Even getting online, you can see a variety of different answers about different questions. So it's just been really puzzling.
Yeah, I would think in your years young, I think that subset of people, you relied on your doctor to inform you fully. And I think I've met a lot of people that now say, man, are kind of at a loss of words on what that means to have their doctor may not be able to tell them exactly the good and the bad. They're just telling you the good.
Right. So. And we found too that the doctors are still at this juncture, against ivermectin, still thinks it is a strange medication to be given. And I could tell almost immediately that it was helping me back when I first began taking it. So there's still a lot of mistrust, a lot of denial about even the medications that, you know, can help someone.
Yeah, I think that that's you're a good example of lessons that my profession needs to learn, how to be humble and also be informative to our patients to make sure they know, and then also taking care of each patient individually.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope though too, Ms. Alverson, that you'll help, you know, for my profession, dentistry, you know, to be able to realize that this needs to be on their radar, you know, especially as there's still boosters out there and everything going on. You know, these surgeons that are placing implants or extracting teeth may not realize, you know, that this is could be part of the problem. And I mean, from this, you know, right at the time I was seeing you, you know, I was trying to form like a group of concerned dentists, you know. I'm part of concerned doctors, but letting the dentist be informed, and you know, your dentist is, you know, on a text chain, you know, with me now, and so the more that we can try to educate both professions, and then you know, just get the word out there so all these patients can be helped, I think it would be tremendous.